at your service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now the host of the show, Rich Orris.
All right, good morning, good morning, good Saturday morning. Hey, you're tuned into the Home Improvement Show, just like he said, right here on Camo X. I'm your host, Rich Orris, and I'm here every Saturday morning. We open up the phone lines to talk to you about your home, from routine maintenance to those big remodeling projects you've been dreaming about forever and ever. We can chat about any of that. The number you're going to need, 314-436-7900. Again, 314-436-7900. So whether you're fixing a leaky roof, you're refreshing up a tired bathroom, you're tackling some energy efficiency upgrades maybe, or just keeping your home in tip-top shape for the seasons to come, getting ready, whatever it is, I'm here to give you some tips, ideas, and some solutions that really work for you. So grab a cup of coffee, get on the line, think about your to-do list, and let's get started. Your home, it's your investment, and your questions that drive this show. So we're really looking for it. Hey, let's just go straight to the phones and see who's up first. We got Mary Beth on the line. Let's see what's going on with Mary Beth. Hey, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome.
Thank you for your service.
Well, thank you for helping me provide that service. I appreciate the call.
Well, my problem is during the storms we had this year, I had damage to my shutters outside, and the shutters are about 50 years old, and they're wood. I want to replace them. I want to know what the best thing to replace them with. I want to have something that I don't have to paint, you know, that's durable.
Uh-huh.
And I also want to know, who do you get to do that? Because I don't know who you even go to get new shutters.
Sure, sure. So there are different types of shutters out there. And depending on the exposure and the length of the warranty on the color and the fade and how all that works, everything you put on eventually is going to fade, or something's going to happen to it, and eventually it will need painted or replaced, or something will have to happen. But you can find some great products that could outlast the time that you're in the home. Some of these might last 20 years or so before you really start seeing a lot of fade or something where it's not looking that great. So kind of working up the food chain, starting with the most common and the best expense, the lowest expense you're looking at is just the typical vinyl shutters. And a lot of those do now come with fade warranties that are 10 to even 20 years long. So they don't fade out as much and as quickly as the shutters did in the 90s, and when they were putting a lot on in the 80s and the 90s and really first starting to make all these products. So they will last longer, and it'll be the most economical version. And you can get them in all sorts of styles and colors. So you can go anywhere. There is like a PVC, more of a solid PVC type shutter. And there's also composite shutters. So it's kind of that the composite shutter is going to be the one that's most like the wood shutter. It will look the most like the wood shutter. It kind of is a piece of wood, but it's made out of composite material. It's not going to rot, anything like that. You're going to 20, 30 years against rot, and probably again 10 to maybe 20 years against the paint fading, because they will be factory painted. So it's a great paint job. They're heavier, they're a little harder to install. You need these clips and mounting, and in how you install them, so it takes a little longer to install. So the composite, depending on your home and what you're after, will probably look the best and cost the most. So you can kind of see.
And how much is how much would that be that I'm looking? Around what amounts am I talking about? I have 8.
Uh huh. So I mean, depending on the situation of where they are and how they mount, if they're on vinyl siding, if they're on brick, all these things are going to sway how
it's on brick.
They get put on there. So composite shutters can be really expensive. I mean, they can literally cost like $1,000 a pair or something to purchase. Depending on what you find. So literally composite shutters can be anywhere from $1,500 to $2,500 to install on a house per pair. And the vinyl, it depends on who you find with labor, and a handyman's going to be a lot less than a full service design build remodeling company, and then people in between will be in between. But a lot of vinyl shutters, you can find them common sizes, the louvered type, really, really inexpensive at like big box stores from $100, $200 a pair, or you can get up to $250 to $500 a pair, depending on the style and the color and the shape and the size, because you can order these too in specific sizes. They'll be more expensive that way, but they'll fit better, they'll look better, they'll line up with what's next to them better. So you're kind of looking at like, where do I want it to line up? That's the detail we kind of get into. So again, you could be $500 to $1,500 a pair on vinyl, depending on what it is and who installs it and all of that. As far as the installer goes, you're looking for anything between just a handyman that has some experience, performing stuff like that, through a siding company, and then all the way up to like at Mosby Building Arts. I have a job right now that we're getting ready to do that we signed in I guess in August, early August, and we're ordering the shutters and we're just replacing the shutters on the house. We would do something like that. We have a lot of service and things. We're going to be the top of the food chain. The handyman's going to be the bottom, and depending on the siding company, whether they want to deal with it or how busy they are, that's the other thing you end up against, is they just kind of go, well, I just don't want to mess with just shutters, so they just don't want to do it because they've got all these, and labor's hard to come by, and the whole gamut gets like that. But basically, that's kind of the who you're looking for, is anywhere from a handyman through siding companies to a company like Mosby Building Arts.
Okay, great. Thank you for your help.
All right. Yeah, no problem. No problem at all. That's very common, something we do all the time. And if Bob can hold on here through the quick break a little bit, I got to get into our first break here, but we'll get to Bob and more questions, more answers, and more home improvement show right after this break. We are back. Home improvement show. Hey, I forgot to say, no cards till a little bit later this evening, like 5 o'clock or whatever. So we got the full time, the full 2 hours to get everybody in. So don't be shy. Don't be a stranger. Get with me today. Whatever you have going on, 314-436-7900, straight into me. Let's talk about your home. And for now, let's talk about Bob's home. We got Bob on the line. Let's get over there and see what is happening with Bob. How you doing, Bob?
Doing pretty good, Rich. Morning. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you, my friend. What's going on?
Yeah, well, my question is, I'm seeing a lot of roofs get put on in my neighborhood, due to storm damage back in March.
Yep.
And so I've noticed something a little bit unusual that they're doing in the valleys on certain homes, not all of them. But I'll say one of them is a hip roof, and the other one's hip roof combination with a maybe a 412 pitch and a 612 pitch. Uh-huh. So in the valleys, they're using some type of metal, you know, I'll call it, you know, a metal valley.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed that one of them looked like it was installed under the shingle, and the other one looks like they stuck it right on top of it, on top of the shingles, you know, when they come together in those valleys.
Uh-huh.
Is there any advantage or disadvantage, or is one of them maybe installed properly and the other one might be installed improperly that you would know about?
Is there a new practice
that they're doing, you know, it's kind of a contrast look, if you will. You know, it's a slightly different color than the roof.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily a new practice. It's something that has happened for a whole lot of years. It just hasn't happened on a lot of kind of standard roofs with asphalt shingles. It originates from slate roofs and clay tile roofs, and it's coming into play with thicker roofs. So a lot of the new asphalt shingles, so if they're going with like a really thick, decorative, long-lasting asphalt shingle roof, because there's major upgrades, some of those will actually require those metal, what we call metal valleys. So, and my guess is what you're seeing in the difference between the two, or at least I hope so, is they sometimes they do that metal valley and they put it on and it just kind of tucks under the shingles and they make those cuts on the shingles coming down.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a good, great, long-lasting product. Usually under that shingle, when they end that metal, they'll put a little bend back around, like a hem seam, we call it. And that will kind of keep any water going sideways. If you get just a little bit or some drips or kind of running sideways along the shingles, it'll hit that and then kind of follow the shingles down. The other thing hopefully they should be doing is still using the ice and water shield in that, where they put that 3-foot wide piece of sticky tape right up that valley. Then they put the metal on, then the shingles go over it. I'm hoping that the one that looks like it's on top of the shingles just has an extra bend, because another way that they do it, because generally in the center, you'll have a little bend up that kind of guides that water down, and then it just kind of widens and goes under the shingles. But sometimes they'll do a vertical bend up, back down, and then across underneath the shingles. And that's meant to kind of slow down any of the water I was talking about that might want to go a little bit sideways and follow those shingles the kind of the wrong way. That kind of should help with that. It gives it a nice clean line, and it gives a area for the shingles to kind of butt up against. So it's just kind of sticking up vertical a little higher than the shingle.
Yeah, I got you.
And I hope that's what they did with the one that looks like it might be on, because if it's on top of the shingle, if it's truly on top of the shingles, that is extremely incorrect and we'll have problems down the road without question.
Yeah, and that's what it kind of looks like to me. You know, I mean, I'm looking at it from street level, and I did tell the neighbor, I said, I don't know, I would be suspect to that particular design, you know what I mean? Because it's so wide. I think that thing is like 8 inches wide. It looks flat, where the other one is definitely tucked underneath the shingles. And so I didn't know about the channel that you were, that particular bend that you were talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But that makes a lot of sense to me, just from my own personal observation.
Yep.
And so I said, well, the only way to really tell is to get up there and get a really close look, you know, because I can't see that good from the street level.
Yeah, and
I
can see
good enough to say, why is that thing so wide and the other one is far narrower? And I can clearly see the shingle is lapped over the top of that particular one. But anyway, it was just a curious thing, because I'm in line for a roof myself, you know, due to the storm. But my roof is going on 1 year old, and it still looks great to me. You know what I mean? When I get up there, I can't see any reason to replace it. But the insurance company said, oh, yeah, you have, you know, some damage. You know, it's not, I wouldn't say it's significant. But so my next question would be is, do you ask your roofer to do something like that? You know, because it does look pretty cool to me. You know what I mean? a nice contrast.
I mean, you can, and you could ask them what, you know, what's the cost difference? Does it really matter with the type of shingles? Because I'm curious if any of these other homes just used just a standard kind of asphalt shingle, or if they, you know, are any of them kind of designer looking, different yeah. styles, because some of those shingles are really, really
yeah.
thick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they've done, where I've seen the vertical kind of bend up on those valleys is really clay tile roofs. I've seen it more on that because clay tile's thicker and there's edges to cover sometimes. So they do that to kind of have something for that clay tile to go up against. And that's more the
yeah,
reason
yeah.
they did some of that. But yeah, not all roofing installers are created equal. Not all know
mm-hmm.
everything. Yeah. I've installed more roofing shingles than I care to admit. I've learned a lot about all this. I've installed a bunch. I have never put in a metal valley, like installed it myself. I've had jobs do it. And I've had roofers okay. do it for okay. me, but I've never personally, I've roofed entire houses, but I've never roofed the type of house where I did that metal, and I wouldn't trust myself to do it and perform
okay.
it, but I would.
Yeah, that was just curious to
or
me
if I did,
I've
it would take like 10 times too long.
Yeah, yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
yep.
And just, you know, and I mean, you know, I don't know, and could you just explain one more thing?
Sure.
About the difference between the standard shingle, besides the thick, is it all about the thickness versus what I'll call the architectural shingle? You know, I mean, whatever shape it may be, you know, I mean,
yeah,
you know, yeah. Do you understand
yeah,
my question?
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
And yeah, the architectural, a standard architectural shingle is thicker than a typical, which we used to use all the time, the three tab kind of flat shingles. And
right,
they
right,
and they
yeah.
get the longer they last and the more they do, they get thicker. And the thickness and heaviness and how much those asphalt pieces that are on there creates the life expectancy, how long it will last, how long does it take to wash those pieces off. So as you go up the chain on buying shingles, when you get to impact resistant IR shingle, when you get
okay.
to the ones that the mildew resistant, where it won't, they'll say, you know, it won't get that kind of mildew look on it for quite
mm-hmm.
some time. They're putting things in the asphalt. They're putting more asphalt pieces and they're thickening that shingle up. So a max definition shingle is a little thicker and it shows more shadow lines, but then they have kind of like designer shingles. Some look like slate. Some still look like the regular architectural shingle, and they have different patterns and designs of these. Some can look like a kind of a shake. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah,
different
yeah.
styles, and they're very thick. They're going to come with like a 50-year warranty instead of like 30.
Mm-hmm.
And those are very thick shingles. And so when you do the valleys and you're lapping one over the other, some of those will get so thick that the manufacturer says, don't do it that way.
Okay.
They'll make them use the metal because of how thick that shingle is. It's just an issue if you get it too much built up in the valleys and too thick and tying into one another. So the manufacturers, so it isn't a bad idea to read the installation instructions of some of these shingles, because a lot of
sure.
them, they are different. And they will
gotcha.
Be installed a little bit different on a hip roof than a typical gable roof in different scenarios.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You answered my question well, and I do appreciate you giving a complete and detailed answer.
Well, I appreciate the call, Bob. I got to get to a break, but that was awesome.
Gotcha.
Great conversation. And yeah, if you're just curious, that's why we're here. Just help kind of figure that out, because you're seeing a lot going on and you just don't know everything about it. Let's see what we could do to help you out. 314-436-7900. We're going to get into a break. More home improvement in just a minute. Here we go. Here we go. KMOX Home Improvement Show. Rich Orr is sitting in the big chair for you here today. awaiting your questions, your thoughts, your comments, your concerns. What's happening at your home? Anything you need, you can find me right here, 314-436-7900. And I want to go back and hopefully maybe Mary Beth is still kind of tuned in and listening, because I want to talk about something that seems very simple, but sometimes you just don't know, or you just don't know the circumstance and really might not understand. And so something like installing shutters can end up being at times more complex than you may think, depending on how the house is, how the shutters are installed, how the windows are, everything's positioned. And so if you have a brick home and windows are in the brick and the shutters mount on top of the brick next to the windows, it's a pretty simple situation. You're still trying to mount and drill into the brick and get them mounted and all of that. But there's a scenario out there that I've seen, and this is the shutters that we're getting ready to do too, actually has this scenario on the front of the house. And it's something from, I would guess like 60s, 70s, maybe early 80s homes, probably more in the 70s, that with a brick front. And what they did was when they put the windows in, they went ahead and put the shutters next to the windows, and they put the brick around the actual shutters too. So if you have a 3 foot wide window and 2 12-inch shutters, your brick opening is now 5 feet wide, and you have a wall behind the actual shutter. So in the one we're doing, it had wood shutters, and the previous owner put vinyl shutters on top of the wood shutters. So then I'm looking at it and I'm going, okay, well, here's the thing. You got rotted wood shutters behind it. When water gets behind these shutters, it's to the wall. It's behind the brick. It runs behind the brick. It's getting to your wall system. So we need to look at a really specific way to install these shutters. It's like, what do you do to the wall before the shutters go on so that it's protected? And if rain blows, because if you just mount vinyl shutters on top of a wood wall, you're going to have some circumstance that you get wind-driven rain, it's going to get behind these shutters, it's going to run behind the brick. So we're installing some wood backing and some house wrap and some metal flashing around all four sides of where these shutters are going, up against the side of the brick, the bottom of the brick, lapping over the brick, so that basically without the shutter even there, if you put a sprinkler and just it kept raining on this wall, that water would go where we want, and it would run off on top of the brick and out and down and go away. And then we put the flashing tape where the mounting screws and everything are going to go to help keep more water out from not following the fasteners into the wall. And then your shutters are mounted. Looks great from the street. It is a neat look to kind of see how they did this with the brick and the windows and stuff. It's just not a great practice of a way to do it. So when they build homes today, if you have brick, they're going to do it like the older homes. And I'm talking older than the 60s and 70s, where it's just a brick home. Your windows are there and all your shutters and all that stuff is on top of the brick. Definitely less issues with that, less going on with that. And there's a lot of things that we see and that we do and that we perform that can seem pretty simple. In many types of jobs and in many ways, It can seem so much simpler than it is. So another situation I run into from time to time, that I just had one this past week again, where it's a little mini small room addition. And someone's looking and they're saying, all right, well, I just want to, and this is the common phrase all the time, I just want to bump out. Like, I just want a little more room here. I want to shift things a little bit. I'm talking like maybe 4 feet. Like, if we could just bump this room out 4 feet, it could give me the space I need for the way I live my life and what we're trying to accomplish in this room. And then I'm trying to explain that, well, that's a room addition. That is adding on to the house. If you bump out and you have distance off the ground and you can keep it under, you can keep it 2 feet or under, then you could possibly just cantilever new floor joists, longer floor joists from the basement if the basement's wide open, and maybe create that without, create an overhang without a foundation. But when you look at going out 3 or 4 feet, you need something to hold this up. You're close to the ground. It's a foundation. It's the same type of foundation that a full-on 20-foot by 25-foot room addition is going to have. And so as we're looking and explaining, and I'm going, well, when you do bump this out and now we need this foundation and we're building the 3 walls and we need windows in the walls, so you have window now, so we're going to put 2 new windows to create the same look, and now your vents are here. So I'm gonna recommend we extend the 2 HVAC vents out towards the window. So now we've got some HVAC work. Said, well, the county codes and municipality is going to make me install the proper amount of outlets for this room. So if this is more than 12 feet wide, I'm going to have, you need an outlet every 12 feet. There's going to be an outlet in there, at least one. Well, I didn't want electrical in there, which I don't even really need it. Well, but they force us to have it. So then I'm drywalling inside. We're deciding what to do with the beam that kind of holds up the house when we create this bump out. So I'm explaining that you can do a beam and a header that's underneath your floor joists, and that'll hold up the second floor, but it's going to stick down about 12 inches, 12 to 14 inches, and then it'll either go straight across with the ceiling at the lower height, or we raise it back up when we get to the other side. Or we do an internal beam where we cut off some of the floor and the band board from the edge of the flooring, and we cut out more drywall and we install that header flush, same height as those floor joists, and we're joist hangering, and then you can, your ceiling can go straight into that bump out. And it'll look like the same ceiling, same height, crown molding can go around. But I've got base trim, windows, window trim, crown molding, and then we get outside in some really decorative wood so that we don't have to do brick. Nice look at wood. This would look awesome. Paint all of that. That's basically a siding job. We got to wrap, flash, keep it dry, put a little 4-foot roof on it. So it's not a big gable roof or anything, but it's a roof. So we got to frame the roof. We got to sheet the roof. We got to put shingles, or then you go, well, if it's smaller, do you do like a copper roof? Would that look good with the home? So once you look at all this, it's every single step, even the flooring. We got to extend the flooring. Do you know what the flooring is? We can put that into there. Where can we find it? Hopefully we can still get it. It's every step of a room addition. You're building a room addition that's 10, 12, 15 foot wide and 4 foot out. And so when you look at that and you go, well, geez, you know, if a room addition costs a couple $100,000 possibly, but this is 25% of the size of most of those room additions, can I get this for 25% of the cost of what a full room addition might be? Absolutely not. There's, you know, you have to still perform all that. You have to still go through all that, and you have to do every piece of that. So the theory that we talk about in the industry, that the first foot is the most expensive foot and the last foot is the most cost-effective foot and the cheapest, well, that's kind of how that theory plays out. You know, we still have to dig for a foundation and pour concrete and then build a subfloor and walls. It's just less of it, but you still have to do it all. So it's, there's just not a ratio that works out in a simple fashion to make that meet and go, yep, it should be 25% the cost. Well, then that should be $50,000. And it just doesn't work out that way. So I've got plenty of different scenarios like this put together for everybody today. But also, we've got what's going on at your home. We've got another segment here coming up. We're going to take a quick short break, but 314-436-7900 will get you right here to me. We can talk about what you need, what you want, what you've got going on this weekend, a beautiful weekend. So let's get in here and get it talked about, get it done for you. We'll be right back after this break. So for you, hey, you have something simple or something that maybe you think should be simple, or now maybe you're a little curious, maybe it's not as simple as you think, feel free to give me a call and let's chat about it. Whatever's going on around about all through your house today, 314-436-7900. Your questions, it's your home, it's your investment, it's your biggest investment. Let's see what we could do to keep it that way, keep it a good investment, and maintenance, cleaning, everything you perform around the house is the best way to do that. So stay on top of that and feel free, jump in here with me and let's see how we can help you out. Again, 314-436-7900. So I've got another one I'll go through that, again, seems simple to some people. And when you think about it, there's things probably with fixing your car that might seem like it would be simple, and it's maybe not as easy as you think, or going to the doctor and correcting something, or trying to get over an ailment seems like maybe that should be simple, but it's really just not as, it doesn't end up as easy as you think. And going through and figuring some projects out to really be accurate and truly understand them isn't always as simple as you think. And there could be a lot more to it, and explaining what some of that is and what we're trying to find out and why is what we're trying to accomplish, what I'm doing every day, going around chatting, talking, and seeing what we could do with Mosby Building Arts to try and help everybody out. So, but for now, let's put a pause on that, and let's see if we can help Bill out. We got Bill on the line. Let's see what's going on. Hey, Bill, thanks for calling. What's up?
No, thanks for taking my call. It's just a simple question about toilet flanges. What would be the best rule of thumb for the height of your toilet flange? An eighth above your floorboard, or even with the floorboard?
So a little above is okay. It can be up to as far as sitting pretty much right on top of it with that flange would be okay. So typically when we're putting in, if you're putting in like a ceramic tile floor and you're using a half inch backer and tile and the mortar and the mud set, and you're going to end up with about an inch to an inch and an eighth floor, what we commonly use as a spacer is the plumbing, the half inch plumbing, like couplings that connect the plumbing pipes with that copper. They've set it on that to screw that down. And that's about, it's for a half inch pipe. So that's about a 5/8, 3/4. And that gets you pretty much to a little bit higher than flush with that ceramic tile floor. So another way you could look at doing it is get the Dura-Rock down around it first.
Right.
And then do that flange, and that'll hold you up. But you're definitely key spot on that you don't want it too low.
Oh, yeah.
You need it the right height so that that wax ring really works out. Or even nowadays, they have kind of foam ones and stuff. They're not even actual wax. They're like foam or rubber that they use as the ring on top of that flange. Yeah. Yep.
So just a little bit above your tile.
Yeah, flush to somewhat above your tile is going to work out.
Perfect. That's what thank you so much.
Yeah, not a problem at all. Definitely something to watch for, something that I've seen so many times and years back where they would take out thinner floors, vinyl floors, put in ceramic tile and not change that flange, not raise that flange up. And because you're changing plumbing, it's glued to the pipe and everything. So it's a little bit harder, kind of not as easy as you think. Like we were just talking about all these different projects. They're not always as simple or easy as you think. So they double up the wax ring and you end up with issues down the road with it leaking and seeping. And you just end up with some water coming out that you don't want out, some smells, some stains. Not a great thing. So that is a very important thing to know and understand. And sometimes you just don't even know that until you get into it. If I'm looking at a bathroom right now, we were talking about changing the toilet, changing the floor. Well, you can't see. There's things we just can't see or know. Is the ceiling or the soffit straight that cabinets are, go up against? You want the cabinets level, but you're not positive if that soffit or ceiling is level or not. You pull a toilet, you don't really know where that flange is until you pull that toilet. So that is where change orders in our industry come from and should come from. Some of them, unfortunately, might be things just typically overlooked or not thought about, but this is the inevitable. Couldn't see it. And do you have somebody that's good enough and smart enough that's going to call that out and go, I'm not going to double up your wax ring and hope for the best. I'm going to say, we really should rework this. We really should make this proper, make it right, and do the right thing for you. But unfortunately, it wasn't there before. We didn't know about it. So we got to get a plumber. It's going to cost some money, but we're going to get your project the way you need it to be. So, hey, we're getting here to the news break. More home improvement to come, 314-436-7900 in the next hour.